In the frozen foxholes of Europe, a malaria-stricken farm boy from Texas faced a choice that would define him: return to combat or be branded a coward. This was Audie Murphy's reality, America's most decorated World War II soldier, whose unflinching memoir captured the brutal essence of combat with such raw honesty that Ernest Hemingway called it one of the finest American war memoirs ever written. Why does Murphy's story continue to resonate decades later? Perhaps because it represents the quintessential American narrative, a poverty-stricken youth who became an unlikely hero through extraordinary courage. His experiences speak so powerfully to the military experience that copies of his memoir are still distributed to soldiers in combat zones today, a testament to its enduring lessons about resilience under unimaginable pressure. Death pervaded the Anzio beachhead like a constant shadow. When Beltsky was evacuated with a shell wound, Murphy reluctantly assumed platoon command, facing the typical distrust veterans held for replacements. Relentless rain turned their position into a quagmire. Men endured flooded foxholes, using ration cans as toilets, while constant shelling repeatedly collapsed their dugouts. Illness swept through the ranks, from severe stomach ailments to widespread diarrhea. Tragedy struck when Gates accidentally shot Smathers, who was engaged to a girl from Toledo during outpost duty. Gates became distraught, while the grave detail's casual reference to packing meat highlighted how commonplace death had become. Murphy, remembering Smathers' dreams of post-war domestic life, carefully marked his magazine pages about homes and gardens for his personal effects. The beachhead gradually strengthened despite constant bombardment, with the saturated ground ironically hindering enemy armor. From his observation post, Murphy spotted German tanks and, with trembling hands, successfully directed artillery fire to destroy one. That night, Murphy led a patrol to disable an abandoned tank. His Molotov cocktails failed due to faulty fuses, but he managed to damage the tank with a grenade through the manhole and blast off its treads. When German guns opened fire, they retreated. Static warfare's monotony affected the men uniquely. Kerrigan wrote poetry about Anzio that Snuffy set to music, while others volunteered for dangerous patrols to break the tedium. After collapsing from exhaustion, Murphy met Helen, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed nurse in the hospital tent. They formed a connection through shared experiences, his poverty and her escape from civilian life's emptiness. They parted using childhood nicknames, Irish and Droopy Drawers, sharing a rare moment of tenderness. Spring transformed Anzio's ruined landscape. During quiet moments, birdsong replaced gunfire, and a cherry tree bloomed near their command post. Kerrigan wrote about cherries on Anzio, while Brandon thought of his daughter in Kentucky, who wanted to cut her pigtails. Her innocence reminded them that purity still existed somewhere beyond the war. The platoon gained new members: Flack, a slight but eager volunteer; Valero, a fierce Chicago Italian who fought with savage joy yet remained companionable; and Bergman, a red-headed Minnesotan who grumbled but stayed loyal. As May ended, their offensive began. American artillery bombarded enemy positions nightly, baiting Germans to waste ammunition while U.S. forces stayed protected. For these battle-worn men, spring brought not just seasonal change, but renewed hope of survival. When they finally reached Rome, their long-sought objective, victory felt empty. They camped in a public park, too exhausted to even remove their boots. They drifted through the ancient streets like specters, unable to celebrate or shake death's lingering presence. Snuffy sought escape in wine, hiding bottles under his blanket. His drunkenness led to religious outbursts until Kerrigan knocked him out with one punch. After sleeping for 2 days, he emerged quieter but somewhat restored. In Rome, tensions flared when drunken Air Corps men mocked combat veterans at a cafe. After one officer imitated machine gun fire, Kerrigan and Snuffy's junior birdman taunt sparked a brawl that required military police intervention. the city held little meaning for battle-hardened soldiers. When replacement Ellerige praised Rome's history, his romantic views clashed with their combat-weary outlook, as they were still grieving fallen comrades. The southern France invasion created a strategic third front against German forces already fighting allies in the north and Russians in the east. As they approached through the mist, Murphy's pre-battle anxiety returned, his attempts at levity falling flat. Landing under German fire, they faced mined beaches and hillside resistance. During their assault on an enemy position, Murphy lost Constantino, who made him promise to visit his mother, and Valero, who fell charging the enemy after his friend's death. In January, Murphy rejoined his division at the Rhine near Strasbourg to help eliminate the Colmar Pocket, a heavily fortified German position. The defenders held the advantage in the 14-degree temperatures and knee-deep snow, with forests, open fields, and fortified villages making movement difficult. German tanks struck the 30th Battalion's devastatingly. The frozen ground prevented troops from digging in, leaving them exposed to systematic machine gun attacks. When Murphy spotted six tanks and hundreds of infantry approaching, he sent the artillery observer to safety and called in coordinates. The enemy's response destroyed their machine gun squad and tank destroyer. After ordering his remaining men, 40 of 128, to withdraw, Murphy stayed behind with the field telephone directing artillery fire. When his ammunition ran out, he climbed onto the burning tank destroyer and manned its machine gun. Fighting through smoke and flames, Murphy continued directing artillery while operating the gun. The Germans couldn't spot him, never expecting someone to use a burning vehicle as cover. Through the phone, Sergeant Bowes repeatedly verified Murphy's survival as he fought on, focused solely on the battle while the inferno finally warmed his frozen feet. The war's end brought no celebration among exhausted soldiers. When Murphy heard of Germany's surrender on a train to the French Riviera, his companions responded with weary indifference. At his Cannes hotel, Murphy soaked in a hot bath, finally relaxing. From his window, he watched gulls over the Mediterranean while Lily Marlene played below. He checked his trusted service revolver before venturing out. The celebrating crowds only irritated him as war memories invaded his thoughts. Burning bodies, Novak's grave at Anzio, Brandon dead under the cork tree. Sleepless in his room, he questioned if war had permanently changed him. His beliefs had narrowed to the tangible, grenades, artillery, and his Garand rifle. Yet he still believed in men like Brandon, Novak, and Kerrigan, soldiers who faced both defeat and victory with quiet dignity. America beckoned. They'd been consumed by death, forgetting life itself. Murphy vowed not to let war defeat him. He would return home, find love, rediscover faith, and view life without cynicism. Like many others, he would learn to work in peace as he had in war, and, ultimately, learn to live again.